الرحمن الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. قال الحسين عليه السلام: أتاني رسول الله وقال: يا حسين، أخرج، فإن الله تعالى شاء أن يراك قتيلا، وَقَدْ شَاءَ اللَّهُ أَنْ يَرَاهُنَّ سَبَايَا. One of the lines that Imam Hussein alayhi salam, he says on his way from outside, going out of Mecca to Karbala towards Kufa, is this line. And sometimes this line has sparked some controversy, sometimes aroused some questions, especially in the minds of our youth, regarding Allah's justice, regarding why Allah wants certain things to apparently happen that aren't in the best of our favor. The hadith goes like this. The line, the translation, is that the Imam says, Allah wants to see me die. He wants to see me die. And He wants to see my women and children become prisoners. So there's questions that come up regarding this, and then followed up by other questions. Three questions I want to address tonight, inshallah, get this done with. And then fourth, I want to share some advice with all of us, inshallah, that we can take home with us. Number one is the story in which this hadith takes place in, this saying of Imam Hussein takes place in. What is it? The context that the Imam says it. Number two is why does God want the Imam to suffer? Why does it seem that God wants the Imam to suffer and die? Number three, why is there suffering in general in this life and tests and all of that? And number four, some advice for when we are facing individual tests and hardships, and when we're facing them collectively as a community as well. Some things that we can say there, inshallah, that we can use, inshallah, as we move on in our lives. The story in which Imam Hussein says this line goes back to when he was in Mecca. He wants to leave Mecca, his brother Muhammad bin Hanafiya, meaning his brother through his father. They did not share the same mother, Imam Hussein and Muhammad. They shamed the same father. Muhammad comes to, who happened also to be a very valiant warrior himself during Imam Ali's time, Muhammad bin Hanafiya. You have seen the movie of Mukhtar, you probably have an idea of who he is. He meets Imam Hussein in Mecca. Before Imam Hussein wants to leave Mecca, he tells him to go to Yemen, go somewhere else. Kufa doesn't sound like it's the right place for you to go. And the Imam tells him, according to the reports, that I'll think about it. The next day, Muhammad notices that Imam Hussein is leaving Mecca for Kufa. So he runs up to him, he says, brother, where are you going? You said you'll think about it. The Imam says, yes, I'll think about it, but it doesn't mean I'll agree necessarily. After we parted and you told me to think about this suggestion of yours, I saw Rasulullah, apparently in the dream. Atani Rasulullah, he came to me, the Prophet, and waqal, ya Hussein, ukhruj, go. Leave, of course, towards Kufa. Why? Not so that you can go and Kufa is going to be in your hands after a short while. No. Leave because Allah wants to see you die and be killed. So he tells this to his brother, and his brother, of course, is very grieved and upset at this. And then the brother goes on, Muhammad bin Hanafiya says, okay, then why are you taking the women and children? And Imam Hussein answers, he says, because Allah wants to see them taken prisoner as well. I have to die, they have to be taken as prisoner. The question arises, why does Allah want this to happen? Why does Allah's mashi'ah, they call it, which means His will, why is it connected to this? Imam Hussein being killed. Does Allah want this to happen? Brothers, I think it's very clear for us. I'm just saying this if anyone has this question. We want to move on. That this doesn't mean that Allah wants it. In other words, that this is something Allah takes pleasure in. This is the ideal that Allah would have wanted for sure to happen no matter what. No, Allah doesn't have problems. Allah doesn't have deficiencies. Sometimes we want something that's not good because of our deficiency. Either it's because of our ignorance, Or because we, although we know it's not something good, but we want it because we take pleasure in it, things like that. Allah doesn't have any of these deficiencies. So if Allah wants something, there must be a greater good in it. Yes, and we discussed this previous nights, the two nights that we talked about, the tree of Bani Umayyah. Allah wants Imam Hussein to die because there's no other way that the tree of Islam will grow back. When Allah wants something, it means there's a good in it. There's a greater good. The greater good was this. Or else, yeah, if it was up to Allah, the ideal, what would it be? For Imam Hussein not to be killed. For Imam Ali not to be killed. The Ahlul Bayt not to be killed. But one after another, this happened. Islam has to survive. And not only in his death, but also the captivity and imprisonment of the Ahlul Bayt and the women and children of Ahlul Bayt. Because as I said one other night, that's the only way Imam Hussein could make his way all the way to Sham. He couldn't go. He had to be killed in Karbala. His family has to go and spread the message from there and destroy the tree of Bani Umayyah from within. So this will of Allah isn't the ideal, you can say. There's no other choice. And at the same time, Allah's not going to ever send lightning down and kill all the bad guys. That's not how Allah does it. And we'll talk about that in the next segment. So Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that's the story. And why and how Allah does not want this for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. There's no other choice. A seed has to be planted by Aba Abdullah. But then the question arises, okay, we understand that Imam Hussein had to go through what he went through. But now, a greater question, a more general question that comes up, is that why is there suffering, so much suffering in this world? And right now, I have no choice, I have to say this. We condemn what's happening. A few days ago, hundreds of Yemeni innocent people in a funeral are bombarded and they all roast to death. What can I say? I don't understand. This is like all the other conflicts maybe can be justified in a sense for some people. But when it comes to this one, these are people who have nothing, no defense whatsoever, and they are roasted to death. We seek refuge in Allah. May Allah return the Imam sooner. May Allah awaken the Muslim Ummah and the Arabs of the Muslim Ummah who claim to have that Arab pride. So why is there all this suffering in this world? Wouldn't it have been better if there was a world with no suffering? Brothers, I want you to pay close attention here. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, when He created us, there was a reason for it. There was an ultimate goal. And to reach that goal, there was no other choice but to bring man into a material world. Why? Because it's only in a material world that one can be tested. Verses of the Quran. وَجَاءَتْ سَكْرَةُ الْمَوْتِ بِالْحَقِّ. When death comes, it comes with haq. Haq means truth, yes? There's no falsehood when death comes. And that's why other verses of the Quran, they say, we lift your veils when you die. فَبَصَرُكَ الْيَوْمَ حَدِيدٌ. Now that your veils have been lifted, you see things the way they really are. Your eyes are sharp. بَصَرُكَ الْيَوْمَ حَدِيدٌ. Sharp. Everything there is truth, no falsehood. When there is all truth and no falsehood, there's no testing anymore. And that's why there's no, you don't have an opportunity for tawbah when the time comes. There's no test there. If there's no test, there's no tawbah. It's only in a material world where you will have haq and batil mixed, and hence testing can happen. So that what can happen? When testing happens, that is when you start growing. Let me give you an example. This world is like a gym. G-Y-M, gym, okay, not gem, gym. When you walk into a gym and you sign up for a gym, if you walk into that gym, you go downstairs, and this example doesn't belong to me, it belongs to one of the ulama. You walk into that gym, you see that, okay, in that corner they have fast food, in that corner they have donuts, in that corner they have ice cream, and they say, welcome to our gym. Our gym is different. Our gym doesn't want you to go through trouble and hardship and tears and sweat. Pumping iron, what does that mean? What will you do? What was the reason you came into this gym in the first place? It was to build yourself, right? A gym with no equipment is no good, right? Or would we stay there if we see that such a gym has such things? No one's going to stay there. If a person signs up, that means that they want to change themselves. They want to shed off the extra weight and extra fat. And it only happens through what? Through equipment. What do you mean there's no dumbbells here? The more equipment, as a matter of fact, the better. This dunya, the material aspect of it, it had to happen because that's the only equipment Allah has. So what happens to us now? We come into this gym, it's time to start working out. Don't say, oh, I wish, you know, a world where there was no, you know, testing, there was no hardship and all that. No, brothers, that's not how it works. It's a gym. We grow up before we're baligh, we get used to doing whatever we like. Yeah? Those days were the good days, weren't they? We grow up, we get used to this. All of a sudden, bulugh happens. And before bulugh, usually, we know it's coming. So we make the most of our time before bulugh comes. And then when it comes, though, that's where it gets very hard because we've gotten used to those older habits. And Allah says, now's the time you have entered. You're now a member of this dunya, this material existence. Bismillah. We cannot grow without this equipment, brothers. We have to understand this or else it's going to be hard on us forever. Sometimes something is hard, you know why you're having it. For example, you're sick, you're ill, you don't like to drink this syrup. But you know it's good for you, you drink it and you suck it in. But sometimes you don't even know why you're drinking this bitter tasting syrup. It's going to get harder, right? And sometimes you might not even drink it. And that'll defeat the whole purpose. That's what it's all about. Couldn't have Allah taken us straight to heaven? I'm just going to give an example for this and I'm going to move on. Couldn't He have taken us straight to heaven, brothers, if you go and you rent a trainer to train you? Can he give you muscles? Like, here are your muscles. Strap them on. Or is it something that grows from within? He'll tell you what you're supposed to do. But you have to do the actual work. And it hurts. It's not fun sometimes. But you have to do the work yourself for it to grow from within. You have it in you. There's a means of bringing it out. That's how it works. Allah can't give us the muscles, the spiritual muscles. Not because He's not strong enough. It's just how it is, brothers. It has to come from within. Our actions are what make up Jannah. Our actions are what make up Jahannam. It's not a place that Allah has to take us. I said this before too. The same way a trainer can't give you muscles, Allah won't do that. If He could, He would. It's not something that's in His realm. It's in our court. The ball is in our court, brothers. This is something to think about. I know there will be some questions maybe. Inshallah, I'm at your service. After the majlis, I'm here. Ask your questions if you have any. Why? Is Allah not powerful enough? No, that's not the case. That's not the case. Don't be carried away by these things. It comes from within. All right. So now I want to talk a little bit about the test that we go through. The hardships we go through, the struggles we go through. The struggle is real. I don't want to talk too much tonight because we're getting closer and closer to Ashura. Tonight and tomorrow night. Brothers, when it comes to the hardship we go through, the tests we go through, the struggles we go through, some are individual, some are collective. I'm going to address each of these separately. But before I get into the individual and the collective and some examples, and I want to break those down, inshallah, I want to say something that is universal here and applies to both when we have individual calamities and problems and tests and trials, and also when we have collective ones. There is one thing we have to fix first, brothers. It is so important. And if we don't fix it, we will struggle forever. And that is to establish and gain a Quranic worldview. Brothers, we're living in the West, growing up in this culture. Sometimes we forget what it's all about. Yes, if life was only here, I wouldn't be sitting here right now talking. I wouldn't. I swear I wouldn't. I'd be somewhere else. And I'm pretty sure lots of us wouldn't be here. If there's an Akhirah, then things change dramatically. But the problem is, in practice, we get so carried away from this and we don't listen to the Quran, we don't recite the Quran enough, that we forget in practice, we forget that it's there. On the other hand though, if we continue going back, if we continue taking care of certain things that I'll talk about inshallah, what we can do is believe that it's coming. The Ahlul Bayt, and I'll talk about this a little tomorrow night, the Ahlul Bayt, they give you the feeling that this world is worth nothing. That's not fair. At least give it 10% value. No, when they speak, it's as if they don't give it any value. But all we do is talk about these things, and it gets all cliche and repetitive. Akhirah is more important than dunya. Yeah, we have to believe. If we believe, if we set the Quranic worldview straight, then what Imam Ali alayhi salam, he says, starts making sense. Recite salawat. If we understand this, then Imam Ali, he will cite a verse in the Quran for us, and it'll be easy to embrace this reality. What is that reality? He says, "Az-zuhd kulluhu." Do you want to know what asceticism really is? Asceticism is bayna kalimatayn. It's in two words, between two words. قال الله لكي لا تأسوا على ما فاتكم ولا تفرحوا بما آتاكم. The Quran tells you, so that you will become of those, or you will have this characteristic in you, that you're not overly joyous and happy when you gain something in this life, and you're not so upset when you lose something in this life. This is the Quran. He says, this is everything you need. This can only happen if we understand the value of this dunya and the value of the akhirah. Sit down and think a little bit. Recite Quran a little bit more. A third of the verses are about akhirah, day of judgment. There's a reason for this. In Shahr Ramadan, they tell you, recite Quran, recite Quran. Why? The Quranic worldview, if it's not there, you have nothing. Everything in your life will change. It impacts everything. The only way we can have this, what the Imam Ali says, you're not going to be too happy when you gain something. How does that happen? I got the car finally that I wanted. And this has happened to all of us, by the way. That one thing that we're after, as kids, it's probably a toy. As we grow older, it's a device. As we grow older, it's the wife. We grow older, it's other things. We grow older, I want to be in charge of this. I want to be in charge of that. They say the last thing that leaves the heart of a mu'min when they're older is hubbul jah, to have a position, to rule over others, to be in charge of others. If we're not going to be happy when all of these things happens, the only reason why someone's not going to be too happy is if they know the real value of it. How many of us has it happened to us? You reach that which you were after, and then when you reach it or you accomplish it, now you're after something else. It even happens in athletes. In all of these major sports, that they have a final championship game, when they win it, is it over? No, they go and train for next year and next year. Insan is like this. Insan wants more. He's 40-0 in boxing, 41-0, 42-0, 40 all the way till 49-0. He wants to go. He wants to be the best. We have this in us. We reach it though, and then all of a sudden we feel like it's not exactly what I wanted apparently. You know, I felt it for a while, but it's gone again. It's happened to all of us, right? It's happened to all of us. This is the manifestation of this verse of the Quran. We didn't understand it before, the value, the true value of it. Now that we gain it, we're so happy. Imam Ali says, be happy. But not so happy. Why? Because it's going to be gone eventually. Even in this life, we lose it. If we don't, once we pass away, it's gone. Right? And also, when we lose something as well. If I lost something, if I lose my life even, it's okay. Because the real life is to come. Once again, I'm sounding cliche. We have to believe this. Ali al-Akbar, what did he say to his father? When his father took a little nap, he woke up, he says, I see as if coyotes and wild animals, beasts tearing me to pieces, tearing us to pieces. Or he says to his son, I saw that we are moving and someone is telling us as we move towards Kufa, this caravan is going and death is following them. That means we're going to lose our lives, the most precious thing, right? What does Ali al-Akbar say? He says, are we going to be on haq or not? If we're on haq, then we don't care what we lose, because he's understood this, brothers. That everything that matters is the other side. I'll get as much of this dunya as I can, but I don't want to lose that. I don't want to lose 1 second of the other side. A person who reaches this realization, this Quranic worldview, the Quran is telling us left and right, then this person, hardship, calamity, test, all of these things that come, he will be upset. He will be in pain, but he will never question. He will never make mistakes to compromise the rewards that he's going to get. So this is something we have to first fix, whether we're going to face individual hardship or collective hardship. Now let's move on. Individual hardship. Before I talk about this a little bit, I want to talk about individual hardship. And then one of those hardships, of course, is calamities and, you know, whatever befalls us. Number two is sins. That itself is something that happens. The tests, the sins that come up. And then I want to talk about anger a little bit. This is something we struggle, all of us struggle with. Whether you are single, whether you are married, whether you have kids, whether you don't, all of us, this is one of those tools and equipment that Allah has for us to grow. It's not easy though, it is bitter as anything. These three I want to talk about in the individual aspect before we move on to the collective. The hardship and calamities that befall us. Before we talk about this, there is a, you can say, a principle that the Quran gives us, that لا يكلف الله نفسا إلا وسعها. Allah will not give you more than you can bear. So for example, if you're stuck in the desert and you're dying and there's like only haram pig out there, well, there is no halal pig, but just pig. If there's pork out there, you have to have, is wajib, he'll tell you. He won't say, I'm gonna test you in a way that you're gonna die even. No, we all know this, of course. لا ضرر ولا ضرار في الإسلام. For that's another principle like this. لا يكلف الله نفسا إلا وسعها, and so on. Even if we didn't have verses and hadith for this, just understanding Allah would be enough for us to know that He will not give us more than we can bear. But sometimes calamities befall us, tragedies come about. We have to understand that this is one of those tests. And that the only thing we can take out of this is if we exhibit some patience. As-sabru min al-iman kar-ra'si min al-jasad. In Usul al-Kafi, that patience compared to the iman of a person is like that of the head to the body. If the head goes, what happens? The soul goes, the body goes, life goes, yes? Allah expects something from us. He expects patience from us. That's the only way we're going to grow. We have to keep this in mind. This is one of Allah's tools. And then when this happens, Imam Ali's hadith that a tragedy is only a tragedy if you don't make the most of it starts making sense. Brothers, whatever befalls us, good or bad, how we react to it is a sign of whether or not that was a blessing or a tragedy for us. This is a very important line by Amir al-Mu'mineen. Your reaction is what defines the good or bad in something. Sometimes people say, something good happened to me. Is Allah testing me? Is Allah upset with me? Is Allah happy with me? We'll see how you used that blessing. Allah, something befell me, a tragedy. Is Allah upset with me? Is this bad for me? Is this something good? Once again, did you exhibit taqwa? Did you exhibit patience in the face of this? Or did you start questioning everything from Allah to Prophet Adam all the way down to today, everybody? Yes, if a tragedy befalls you, but brothers, it's okay to be upset. The Prophet lost his son Ibrahim. He wept. He cried. That's okay. But we're not going to question everything. What doesn't kill you only makes you stronger. And that's why Imam Hussein taught us that listen, oh my followers, if Allah brought you into a material world, He also brought me, who is your, the highest being on the face of the planet right now, He also brought me into a material world. Let me show you what a material world is all about. A material world is all about this. But Allah loves us so much that He doesn't give us too many problems. It's not like every single day a tragedy is befalling us. But we have to be ready for them. We have to think about it and be ready before it comes, so that when it comes, we don't mess up. Imam Hussein, the worst of tragedies befell him. The Ahlul Bayt teach us that we are no exception, and we are your role models. See how we dealt with it. You also deal with it the same way. And in the future, it will pay off. Imam Hussein teaches us this. That's one test, the calamities, the natural disasters, all of these things. Another thing that we're dealing with on a daily basis, because Allah doesn't give us tragedies every single day, one thing that we're dealing on a daily basis is the sins that come up. I know I've said this before, that everything in our growth and spirituality is first and foremost to take care of our wajibat and muharramat. I've spoken about this before. But tonight I want to say this. How can we push ourselves in this direction more? How can we help ourselves a little bit more when it comes to sins? Brothers, one of the most important things, and this is the younger ones, your friends, guys. And yes, I see it on social media. I see it. And it's happening. Some of the people that you've spent so much time with, worked on them so much, helped them out so much, answered their questions so much, two friends are enough to take them the wrong direction again. A time comes that the parents aren't that which matters anymore, what they say. 17, 18, maybe. The Mawlana, it doesn't matter what he says anymore. It's all about friends now. Guys, the Quran tells us straight up. It says, "Al-akhillau yawma idhin ba'dhum li ba'dhin adu illa al-muttaqin." On the day of judgment, all those friends that you had, guys, they're all going to be enemies on the day of judgment. There's one exception, illa al-muttaqin, the ones who were obedient to Allah. The ones that when you sat down with them, you remembered Allah more. They didn't push you in the wrong direction. How much should this be emphasized, brothers? How much can this be emphasized? I don't know. Another thing, when it comes to sins, brothers, we've experienced this. Don't take the first step, and don't be like, I'll take the first step in this direction, but you know, I'm careful not to fall into the sin. No. Stay away completely, please. The first step, that's what shaitan wants. The second step will come, the third step will come. You guys probably know what I'm talking about. Don't take the first step. Don't put yourself in environments you're not supposed to go in, you're not supposed to be in. And say, I'm staying away from the haram part. No. أَخُوكَ دِينُكْ فَحْتَطْ لِدِينِكْ. Your brother, the imam says, the deen is your brother. Be very cautious when it comes to your deen. How is it? Would you ever put your brother and make him subject to any harm? No, you wouldn't. You make sure that he's away from any harm, yes? Here also, the deen is your brother, the imam is saying, as if. Don't even get close to that thing which you're not supposed to get close to. And I know there's some things trending nowadays. Another version of Islam that, you know, says you're Muslim by birth. You're Muslim by appearance maybe, and hijab or beard, but everything else about you is like us. It's perfectly fine. No, that's not fine. We are first Muslim, then we're Western or American or English, British, whatever. Am I saying that these geographical regions are bad? No. Allah's ard is wasa. Allah, all land is Allah's land. And an Islam that's here is as good as an Islam in the Middle East or any other country or African country. But what I'm trying to say is that we are Muslim first. Some of these things that trend, sometimes they get you close to haram and eventually you fall in haram. SubhanAllah, just the other day I saw something, I got so upset. A brother that I know even, he's getting too close to some things that he's not supposed to getting close to. How did it start though? It started from something else. It started from something else. Just making certain clips, for example. It started from there. Then certain people liked his clips. They started getting in touch with him. Then he's getting calls. And then now he's places where he's not supposed to be. This is how it works. The first step. Shaitan never says, go and, I don't know, drink something that you're not supposed to drink. See something that you're not supposed to see. He says, listen, it's halal to do this. I know better than you. I'm teaching you. I know the fatwa here is halal.
But yes, it's halal, but I'm getting close to fire. We don't get close to fire. I think I've emphasized that enough. And the same sabr principle that applied when it came to calamities applies here even more. As-sabru sabran. In Usul al-Kafi, we have this hadith. The Imam says there's two types of sabr and patience. As-sabru sabran. Sabrun 'inda al-musiba hasanun jamil. When you have sabr in the face of calamities, it's all good. It's good. Hasan and beautiful. It's good and beautiful. But wa ahsan min dhalika as-sabr 'inda ma harrama Allahu 'alayk. The greater sabr, the more valuable sabr is that which you exhibit when haram happens. Because now you're fighting yourself. There's a reason why the Prophet called it the great struggle, the great fight. It's against yourself. Sometimes lifting that blanket off of yourself for Fajr is heavier than certain weights. Just last night one of the brothers told me this. One of these great Iranian weightlifters who breaks records every time in the Olympics. They asked him, is there anything that you can't lift? He said, yeah, my blanket for Fajr time. Recite Salawat. But since we're all, you know, we're all young here, right? We want to give an example that we can relate to more, right? Once again, let's go to the gym. Look at sins like this, brothers. And by the way, let me say this on the side before I give you this example. Guys, I don't know how many of you guys actually work out. But please stay in shape, one. And two, you guys are probably thinking, why doesn't he do it himself? And that's why all of you are laughing. You were thinking it, all of you. I know it. I've done it before. My days are done. Because not only because you'll be healthy and all that kind of stuff, that's awesome too, but the discipline that you gain. And I don't know, but when you hit weights, brothers, your worldview and perspective on life and deen will change, I'm telling you. What you go through there is an example of life itself and what Allah brought us here for. It's hard, but how it pays off. It's bitter and disgusting when you're tearing the microfibers in the muscles, and then the lactic acid begins to cover the muscle and burns. It burns. People, they hate this feeling. But the great bodybuilders, they say, we love that feeling because we know that pain is going to turn into gains. With a Z, by the way. I want to use this example here too. That brothers, we have physical muscles and we have spiritual muscles. Every sin that comes up is a workout by Allah that He's putting in front of you. Every single time you put aside something haram because of Allah, that was a workout. Go have a protein shake. That was a workout. And every time we don't and we give in and we slack off, we miss the workout. Have you noticed these, the ones that, I don't know which ones of you actually do this, but have you noticed some of these professional bodybuilders, what they say, they will lose their life but not miss a workout. They will not miss a workout because they know every single one counts. And if I miss one, I fall back. I'll fall behind two reps and I won't make them gains anymore. Allah is exactly like this. This is the best example I can find. Look at it like this, brothers. When you look at it like this, it's easier to digest that all of these are workouts that Allah has put before us because He loves us. He wants us to grow. That's with sins. But one of the sins out there, brothers, is what happens as a result of anger. Oof. God knows. Anger is something that we are sitting here talking about it right now. But when it happens, when you feel it, it's different than when you talk about it. I'm going to talk about it right now. And we're going to be like, yeah, that's one of the best things, to be patient in the face of anger. But when it happens, no, it's not sweet. That's why Allah gives major rewards when you're angry, but you bottle it up. Some of the urafa and the greats, they got what they got because of them bottling up their anger. Of course, not once and twice, but proving to Allah
that they care for Allah and Allah's commands, and eventually they got some very high spiritual ranks because of just their anger in the face of their in-laws. It's interesting, the story. His mother-in-law, Sayyid Hashim al-Haddad, for example, in the face of the pain and suffering that this mother-in-law inflicted on him. Mother-in-laws are good. This one wasn't. Just because of anger. These are tools that Allah has. Let's talk about anger a little bit. When you get angry, you lose the mind. That's one thing. And we have hadith for this. It's junoon. You lose the mind. Okay, so a person who's going to lose the mind, if a person's going to go crazy, what do? They tie him up before he goes crazy. So when he goes crazy, he can't do anything about it, right? The nafs is like that when it's angry. What are we supposed to do when anger comes? We have to tie it up or else it's going to go all crazy. Whether it's with the parents, whether it's with siblings, children, it doesn't matter. Your wife, husband, the ones who are married, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? We get angry. Unless it's your first or second year that you're married, you know, we're still the love story goes on. But after those years, the anger that comes up, it's not something sweet. What do? When you leave the scene, number one, you leave the scene. If you can't, you don't think I'm going to stay here and I'll control. No, when you stay there, the only thing that you want to accomplish in all of your life is to make sure that you hurt the other person, verbally or physically. Do something and this haram will come out. That's why some of the ulama, they say there's no bones in the lips. Why? So that when you get angry, you can press them firmly together so you don't say anything. Because if you say something, it's probably going to be haram. Leave the scene. But if you don't leave the scene and you make mistakes, brothers, think about what happened and that scenario so that next time when it comes up, you know what to do. Or else you will fail again. Don't leave it and I'll think about it when it comes up again. Okay, I had this, there was this episode that I had with my husband, with my wife, with my parents. This is what happened. I hadn't washed the dishes when I was supposed to. She said this, I said that, and just things went downhill from there on. Next time, what do I do? Think about it. Maybe discuss it with others. So that the next time the same episode comes up, you've already tied your hands. You know, you don't even think. You just do what you got to do and you leave. Or you do whatever you have to do. But my parents, they don't make sense when they're telling me to do this. They don't know. I know. Sometimes, brothers, they'll tell you this. That they're making a mistake. They're not being logical. My wife, my husband is not being logical. My kids. Brothers, the test. That's what the test is all about. What they were saying made sense to you, it would be easy for you not to get angry, right? You're supposed to exhibit patience even when it's not making sense. That's the whole test. The brother comes to the center. He runs the center, for example. I'm not talking about this center. I'm talking in general. I've seen this before. He runs the center. But then you hear he has anger issues, anger management issues. There's no joke here, brothers. And that's why one of the greatest companions of the Prophet who died in the battlefield of Uhud, in the battle of Badr or Uhud, one of these two, when they were burying him, the Prophet was going behind him, tashi' al-janazah, barefoot, the angels are here and stuff. But when they buried this person, all of a sudden the Prophet said, oh my God, he just went through some severe pressure in the grave. Why? Because of anger management. If you want to be an arif, anger management is everything. Let's move on to the collective now. Brothers, we also face hardship. We also face challenges collectively in our communities. One thing that is of the utmost importance before I talk about a little bit about other things is this. That we have to, if we take care of the individual aspect and take care of our spiritual growth, that itself is a deterrent to problems. And it'll be a help to solving problems. That's why Imam Khomeini, he says, if 124,000 prophets that we had were to all gather in one room, there would be no arguments. Why? Because they've killed the nafs within them. They don't go by their desire and whatever their interests dictate. No. Allah is everything for them. If we also take care of this, you can be sure that many of the problems will be solved. Because lots of the problems, when you go and look into them, and they trace back to this person's interests, that person's interests, instead of the collective interest. But let me just say this, brothers. Our ahadith, they imply the same way we are individuals. I'm one person, you're one person. Our collective community is also in a way one body and one unit. And if this doesn't put behind successfully the tests and challenges that come its way, the same way individually we wouldn't make it to Jannah if we weren't able to pass the tests, here that collective body will also fail in bringing back the Imam of the time. We're all fighting each other, we're all upset with each other, and then the Imam wants to come back. The Imam says, take care of these petty issues so I come back, inshallah, we take care of main issues. So that you're ready, so that what happened with the Kufans doesn't happen again. Allah's not going to let that happen again, so He's going to make sure we're taking care of ourselves. We have to understand this. We have to learn from our mistakes. Sometimes you will see one thing repeating itself again and again in a community. What, for example? Disrespecting. Instead of showing love and trying to fix the problem, right away we dismiss. Why? Because this community, for example, we don't have these issues in our community. This isn't a community that deals with these issues. Go somewhere else. What are you talking about? Time is moving on and the eras are changing and cultures are adapting. New issues will come up. We have to face them. Again and again, you see. Eventually, you see that the next generation deserts that community. And then you want the Imam to return? And the younger ones have to understand this too. Brothers, when it comes to running communities and keeping them together, the elders play a major role. Their experience is something that you cannot question. Yes, sometimes the laws of Allah and Islam are being trampled. It doesn't matter, young, old, whatever, that's their, a stance is made. And we all understand that. But when it's not like that, I feel like this has to happen. He feels like that has to happen, but the elders or the ones that are in charge, sometimes they're younger ones even, but they're in charge. They have been entrusted with this responsibility of making sure that things run smoothly. You can't, just because of personal matters, personal understanding and discretion, cause chaos. No, this is not something. And I've seen cases like this before in the past. Younger ones who made noise, caused problems, they grew up and they have now, they're in charge and they have positions in the community. And all of a sudden, they're doing the same things that others did when they were younger and they went against them. It's so interesting how history just, the patterns just keep repeating themselves. That's not how it works. If someone's in charge, they're looking at the greater good. One, we have entrusted it with them. We trust them. We know that they're trying and pushing hard for the greater good. And then this person, we're going to put bumps along the way and make sure that the path isn't smooth that they're striding on. No. These same people, whenever they're in charge, they expect others to be like that with them too. Keep this in mind, brothers. It's happened too much. Another thing that we have to keep in mind. You overlook a lot of things and personal grudges have to go out the window. God knows how many bad cases we've had just because of grudges. How much logistically a community is suffering because one person was upset with something and they went and complained to the wrong person, for example. This happened years ago in a community that I might have grown up in. And it happens a lot. 2 people, 10 people, they have something instead of first speaking to the people that they're supposed to because of a grudge. Because so-and-so disrespected me. Fine, he disrespected you. Go settle it with him. But just because he's running the center, the community, he's one of the other ones, he's one of the respectable figures, you don't undermine his status. And then in return, what ensues is the community is harmed. No, overlook. Imam Hussein teaches us all of these things. When Hur came, everything was forgotten. Everything. Everything. All in a nutshell, to put it all in a nutshell, brothers, this nafs, as long as it is strong, and as long as it's not been taken care of, these things are going to happen. Inshallah, Allah gives us the tawfiq for this. Let's go to Karbala. As-salamu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. I'm afraid I won't be able to do justice. So I'm going to read a little bit. I don't know what to say, brothers. I don't know what to say. The tragedy that befell Imam Hussein was not one or two tragedies. God knows what went through the heart of Abu Abdullah. God knows how radiant, how great Abu Abdullah was on the day of Ashura. One after another, these flowers are being picked by Allah because He loves Hussein. Hussein, you have to die for sure because Islam is in danger. But I'm going to make sure that you also benefit from all of this. One after another, the tests come. Oh my God. La ilaha illallah. The time came, all the ashab are gone. Imam Hussein alayhi salam sees that it's the turn of the Bani Hashim to go now. The beloved Ahlul Bayt and the family and descendants of the Prophet, the ones that everyone had to see as kings, they have to go one by one and be slaughtered in the worst way. So what's he going to do? Is he going to send others first? No. Ali al-Akbar knows what his responsibility is. He comes to his father. He says, "Oh father, do you give me permission?" And his father says, "This is for Islam. Yes, go." Yes, he cried for Hazrat Qasim until he fainted. It was hard on him. He cried for other ashab, the imam. But when Ali al-Akbar came, the imam said, "Go. Don't think twice. I'm not going to let people think that there's any weakness here when it comes to my own family and my own son." But Ali, everyone is in love with him. Everyone. So when Ali wants to set off to go, as he's going, Imam Hussein lets us know how much he loves Ali. Imam Hussein, he says, "Ashhadu, Allahumma ashhad ala ha'ula, faqad baraza ilayhim ashbahu an-nas khalqan wa khulqan bi Rasulillah. O Allah, bear witness and be witness that the one that was the most similar and resemblant of the Prophet has gone, both in appearance and in demeanor and akhlaq. Allahumma bi rasulik Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, kunna idha ishtaqna ila ru'yati nabiyyik nadharna ilayh." O Allah, whenever we would miss the Prophet, we would look at Ali in al-Akbar. "Oh Ali, can you walk a little bit? I want to see the Prophet again." And the Prophet looked like Lady Fatima, they say. Even Hussein looks at Ali in al-Akbar is as if he's seeing Fatima al-Zahra. This is one of the remaining Ahlul Bayt that the Prophet used to look like. As he goes, Imam Hussein, they say, he takes his beard, he points to the sky, and he says these words to Allah. And then he turns to Umar ibn Sa'd. He says, "Qata'a Allahu rahimak." May Allah disconnect you and cut you off from those your loved ones, the same way you did this to me. Ali wants to go now. Brothers, you want to see how hard it is? Walamma azama 'ala al-harb 'azza firaquhu 'ala mukhaddarat al-imama. Ali al-Akbar goes to the tents. He's bidding the women and his maharim farewell. It's very hard on the maharim. It's very hard. They say to him, "Don't leave us and let us be estranged. Ali, don't go." The report says Ali goes as if he didn't even hear them. That's how much he's in love with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He wants to go. He goes to the battlefield. He fights valiantly. He kills so many of the enemy while he's reciting, "Ana Ali ibn al-Husayn ibn Ali, nahnu wa baytillahi awla bin Nabi." I am Ali, the son of Hussein, the son of Ali. We are closer to the Prophet by the Kaaba. "Tallahi la yahkumu fina ibn al-Da'i, at'anukum bil-rumhi hatta yanthani." That cursed one, we're not going to let him do what he wants to do and take command. "Yazid, I will fight with you until my spear is bent." "Adribukum bisayfi ahmi an abi darba ghulamin hashimiyan alawi." I will fight you and strike you
and protect my father and support my father. And when I fight you, you are fighting the youth that is Hashemite and is Alawite. They say he goes to the left, he destroys the left side of the army. He goes to the right, he destroys the right side of the army. To the middle and the heart of the army, he destroys. But they say he comes back to the Imam. And when he comes, he says, "O Father, al-atashu qad qatalani. The thirst is killing me, O Father. Is there any water in this camp so that I can drink, so that I take care of business with this enemy?" They say his father says, "Look at my tongue. Feel my tongue. It is drier than yours. There is no water. Brothers, are you ready for the sacrifice?" They say Ali was standing there in front of his father, in between the links of his armor, there is blood squirting out because of all the minor scratches of the swords that he has sustained. Brothers, they say, in fights, in battles, in wars, when you sustain many little injuries and blood is leaving the body, you become more thirsty. Ya Abata, al-atashu qad qatalani wa thiqlu al-hadid ajhadani. The weight of the armor has taken all of my energy, Father. Is there any water? His father says, "Go back and fight. You will be killed soon. And your grandfather, the prophet, will quench your thirst." And he goes back. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah. He goes back, he fights and fights until eventually he is struck in the head. The blood gushes out of this blessed forehead of Ali al-Akbar, just like his grandfather Amir al-Mu'mineen. They say he hangs on the neck of his horse, half unconscious, as if the blood is squirting into the eyes and gushing over the eyes of the horse. The horse, instead of going back to the tents, goes way, way down into the heart of the enemy. They knock his head with an iron rod. A spear is lodged, they say, into his chest, onto the ground. Ali ibn al-Akbar, he says, "O Abata, alayka min as-salam." This is my grandfather quenching my thirst, and he says, "Hurry." He says, "Rush to us." But, oh brothers, Ali ibn al-Akbar is way far away from Hussein. They come with sticks and stones. They come with the army comes with swords and spears. فَقَطَّعُوا هِبُسُفُ بِسُيُوفِهِمْ إِرْبَادٍ إِرْبَادٍ. They cut him to little pieces. Hussein, please make it to Ali. Make it to Ali as they stone him. Hussein goes, Zainab goes, Abbas goes to the body of Ali. As Abu Abdullah approaches this body, scattering the enemy, what does he see? قطعوا إربان إربان. Their pieces of Ali are all over the sand. The blood of Ali is all over the place. Abu Abdullah sits down next to the body of Ali. Abbas, take Zainab back to the tents. Leave me with my son Ali. Ala dunya ba'daka al-afa. This world is worth nothing anymore without you, oh my beloved Ali. To make things worse, the enemy is cheering and clapping at Hussein. They say Hussein puts his cheek on the cheek of his son. They say he was so quiet that the enemy thought that Imam Hussein's soul had also departed. Oh my Ali, there is no value in this dunya after you. Hussein wants to take the body of Ali back to the tents. But the problem is that the body of Ali is not carryable but by one person. Oh Hashemites, oh Bani Hashem, come. Bring a cloak with you. Let us put the pieces of Ali in this cloak and take him back to the tent. لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون والعاقبة للمتقين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد. اللهم اغفر للمؤمنين والمؤمنات والمسلمين والمسلمات الأحياء منهم والأموات. تابع اللهم بيننا وبينهم بالخيرات. اللهم اشف مرضانا وارحم موتانا وسلم ديننا ودنيانا. اللهم احفظ علماءنا وعجل اللهم في فرج مولانا صاحب الزمان. صلوات.